You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
More than a century after she stepped aboard what she called death's carriage, Emily Dickinson continues to be one of America's most beloved and most enigmatic poets, beloved perhaps because of her enigmatic qualities. She was a prolific writer, but intensely private, so the vast majority of her work has been published posthumously. Joining us now are artists Jen Bervin and Marta Werner, who is the associate professor of English at DeYouville College. They have put together a book called The Gorgeous Nothings, a gorgeous collection of Dickinson's work that was found written on envelopes, and it's been reproduced life-size in full color both front and back with an accompanying transcription to aid the reading of their rather non-traditional forms. And I thank both of you so much for being on our show. It's hard to describe the beauty of these envelopes and the words on them over the radio, so one of you, can you give our listeners an idea of what these works are and what they entail? Jen? Marta?
Sure. Well, we have 52 of them, for one thing, and we should say really immediately that they're not necessarily a distinct constellation of Dickinson's writings. We don't know if she set out to write these poems on envelopes and made them a kind of collection. But when you see them, they do seem to have various relations among them, particularly visual relations. And I think we each have our favorites. Mine is probably a manuscript that begins clogged with music, like the wheels of birds. And I think Jen's might be 636, am I right?
It begins, "Excuse Emily and her atoms." It's such a lovely one.
So the sense is that she had a thought, and there were these envelopes because she was engaged in there was a lot of correspondence in those days, and she just wrote them on the envelopes, but then the envelopes to some degree determined how the poems were structured or how they were written?
Absolutely.
She's doing such interesting things. She's breaking that space into columns, almost like a newspaper column, with very strongly enjambed lines. And she's working with the shapes in the envelope, so some things are funneled into a triangle of the flap. Some things are working with the very subtle rule of the paper. There's a lot of visual acuity.
The paper is folded, and of course we have that triangle of the flap. And these poems have been described as experimental. Do you think that they are? And if they are, is it because of where she was working on them?
Oh, I think they're definitely experimental, but probably all of Dickinson's poems are experimental, and they may just be a kind of last phase of that experiment. But they're also experimental for the reader, because they compel us into this kind of volitional relationship with the document. So we're turning it, even as she's turning it to write, right? We're turning it to read.
Are these all late poems?
Most of them. It's not exclusively the case. There were a couple written probably in the 1860s, which is generally thought of as the sort of height of her writing. But most of them are after 1870.
And listeners can see some of these envelope poems because we posted them on our show page at WNYC.org. When were they first known to exist?
Well, the envelope poems have all been, despite what some people think, they've all been published. They were published by Johnson in the 1950s. But most of them seemed to disappear in that publication, in subsequent publications, because they weren't seen. And so I almost missed many of those envelope poems in a first reading through her work.
Well, some of these are the same poem that was published with differences. So are these the first time we're seeing something like "Unknown for all the times we met a strange, however intimate, what a dissembling friend"? That includes an extra couplet that was dropped from the final version.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, they're certainly different in every way than we've seen them before, largely because we didn't see them before, right? What we had were kind of a sanitized version of them, almost. There's no way, in some sense, to turn these into printed artifacts.
And is this the first time they've been compiled this way?
Yes, yeah. And when Marta says previously published, she's talking about a typographic publication of these works. And as we are well aware, a typographic translation of these works is very challenging. So it's not surprising it didn't go well the first
10 times or so.
Yeah, well, what we're seeing here is also her thought processes. We get lots of dashes and words crossed out. So are we learning by looking at these, her processes of working?
I think so. And I think anybody interested in the genesis of the text will be fascinated by these documents, because they do bring us back to this, you know, really looking at what a draft is, right? A kind of trial, the trial of writing, and how you're always changing things and coming up with different versions, even in the, you know, the physical act of writing.
So do we know if these were drafts for poems that she later wrote out on regular sheets of paper to be published or not to be published?
Well, some of them appear in other versions, but many of them are simply in the draft stage, as so much of her writing was after 1870. It's not the case that everything she did after 1870 was a draft, but these are part of that movement towards back to the draft, I think, which is perhaps the most experimental phase of writing.
Well, you have to wonder what extent she was writing these things for herself alone.
Well, I love that question, because I think when we frame Dickinson, we frame her in terms of how little her work was published or her rejection of publication. And I think we rarely frame it in terms of what is possible in a private draft or multiple private drafts that can only happen privately. And I think she was a master of that. And so being able to create these spaces that weren't going to need to make their way into publication in her lifetime.
Well, she wrote 1,800 poems, and yet how many were actually published during her lifetime?
I can't remember what the current number is. It's not 11. It used to be 11, and I think it's gone up a little bit since then. But what I like, I mean, there is this kind of intense privacy to the documents, but it's so private that it's almost a privacy turned inside out. I mean, these are poems written on envelopes that were originally designed for sending out, and whether they ever left her desk in some ways doesn't matter, because they were disseminated just absolutely beautifully years later when they were found.
Do we know why she resisted publishing so much? Was it modesty? Was it insecurity? And what can we learn from the poems that she did allow to be published? Were they different from the ones that were not published?
My theory, and it's only my theory, is that the most important thing to her was her time. And she figured out a way to have almost all of it for her writing. And that means foregoing social occasions, social engagements, publication questions. She was a prolific correspondent. And so when you look at how many manuscripts remain in letters and drafts, you have over 3,000. So she was, I don't think she had time. I think she chose what she wanted to do with her time.
And until recently, she's been seen as a kind of a Victorian, rather staid, prudish woman. And now suddenly I've been reading about how people are seeing all sorts of erotic things in her work.
Oh, there's plenty of erotic things in her work. I was just, in fact, reminded of this when I was looking at a draft that she wrote in the 1870s, where she writes, perhaps to a recipient, perhaps not. She didn't send it. But she says, "Will you lay me in the moss?" You taught me the word.
I've never received a letter like that. My guests are Marta Werner and Jen Bervin, who have put together this very beautiful book called The Gorgeous Nothings, Emily Dickinson, The Gorgeous Nothings. Poetry often is thought of as something that has a strong oral aspect, that a poem can best be understood when it's read out loud. But these poems have a very strong visual quality. Do you think that was intentional on her part, or just a happy result of her choosing to write on envelopes?
I think all of the manuscripts are strongly, strongly visual. And if you look at even the first two-volume manuscript book that came out with Franklin, which I deeply respect and love, you'll see a transformation from the early manuscripts to the late in terms of, that I think is almost spatial in what's happening, in terms of the scale of the letters, the scale of the spaces, radically change line lengths over the course of that two-volume collection. So I think there's intense attention to visuals throughout her work, and these are perhaps some of the more extreme examples, but working with these taught me so much more about the other manuscripts.
Well, there are different ways to read certain of these manuscripts. If you hold an envelope one way, one stanza is upside down, the other right side up. And again, the question of intention comes up. Is this indicative of a helter-skelter sort of note-taking, or was she making an intentional art form? Of course, we don't know.
We can't answer, really. And, you know, it's so dangerous when you get into the realm of intentionality. But there is something... the energy is intentional. And I think, you know, in some ways, this kind of division between the visual and the sonic elements in the poem, it doesn't have to be a division, right? They are both. They sound and they look, right? And we gaze at them and they gaze back at us. But when we read, we also read them, right? Read them aloud. And then we see all of those things at play, the sonic, the visual, and, of course, the ideational there as well.
Her handwriting can be difficult to read at times. Was it hard to crack the code of her hieroglyphics?
Bird tracks, right? Higginson called them. Like the fossilized bird tracks. But actually, I don't think it's hard, I mean, compared to other 19th century handwritings. And Jen did this incredible, maybe you can describe it, right? This kind of collation of the letter forms. In Dickinson, and you begin to see these kinds of incidences of repetition. So it's pretty easy to decode once you see those.
It was a practical query. I was just trying to find a font that would be sympathetic to her script, and in doing so, found, you know, for example, you need two different kinds of W's. You need a rounded W and a pointed W, and you need a strongly rounded capital A, which really doesn't exist typographically, and I did them just to really look at them in an isolated way.
And also, when you're reading them, some words are larger than other words, and you can't help but think she thought that was a more important word the kind of word that you would italicize or underscore. But of course, she wasn't doing that.
She does that a little bit with the variants. So in many of her manuscripts throughout, and it's one of the most fascinating things to me, she creates variant choices within her poems. And some of the variants in the envelope poems are written at a kind of a half size.
Now, one reviewer described her work as dramatizing the interplay of the visual and the verbal. Mm-hmm. Now, she's also often been called arguably America's greatest poet. I don't know if there's ever such a thing as a greatest anything other than Shakespeare and Bach. But a good argument can be made, can't it?
Well, she's certainly up there. She's certainly a fantastic experimental poet. I think, you know, she might be
the mid-19th century, and she's an experimental poet at a time when were there other experimental poets?
Well, I think Whitman was pretty experimental.
Oh, true. An argument for being the greatest poet, too.
He does, too, yes.
But, well, it's extraordinary that we had two great poets living at the same time. Probably didn't know each other.
Dickinson knew of Whitman. She once says that she won't read him because she heard he was disgraceful. But we can't really believe it. She probably read everything. I would take her comment with a little grain of salt.
Thank you both so much for being on our show and for introducing us to this side of Emily Dickinson, Marta Werner, and Jen Bervin. The book, Emily Dickinson, The Gorgeous Nothings, it is published by New Directions. Christine Bergen, is it, or imprint? And as I said before, you can see some of these envelope poems by going to our show page at wnyc.org. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.